It's a real pleasure to thank the organizer for being here, not only here at the conference, but at the program itself. And I have to say that what I will try to present is also some piece of work that was, well, first of all, strongly motivated by, but even actually it has been performed, even if not completely, just over here. So the idea is to comment on something which is really technical, which is a way to compute higher orders in perturbation theory by a stochastic method, a numerical stochastic one. Okay, so I can start with a brief motivation. That was part of our original motivations. So it is well known that when it comes to perturbation theory, the lattice is quite an ugly regulator. And that is in particular true for lattice gauge theory. So one of the main virtues of lattice gauge theory is the fact that you live on a compact domain. While doing perturbation theory is going to decompactify that. And as a result, you are never done with vertices. The higher loop you want to go, the more vertices you have to take into account. They are more and more irrelevant, but they can do provide a contribution via divergent loops. That's the main point. On top of that, then, there are other complications. So most of what you know from continuum perturbation theory is not immediately, cannot immediately be taken to take advantage of those. Okay? So also the other point is that just because of the proliferation of vertices I was telling you before, changing actions can be quite difficult. And you do want to change action and regularization schemes. And then you have also an extra bonus, which is often you have bad convergence properties. Okay, this is a canonical example. So this is how a new irrelevant versus looks like. It's even hard to read it. And there was this fact that was quite famous at some point, and in many articles and books where things were carefully treated, I mean, only in printing, there were errors in quoting everything which was needed. Okay, in this framework, you could be surprised, but despite this, so this is our old paper back in '95, Renormalons from eight loop expansion in lattice gauge theory. And this is the 20 years later stuff. By Gunnar Bali and Antonio Pineda, compelling evidence of renormalons in QCD from high orders. So it's really surprising in a sense that the scheme in which you would expect more difficulties is actually the one in which one was able to inspect the renormalon growth. So you try to trust it, and then you see whether at high orders you really can see that behavior. How this come about, we will see, but here, the main motivation, we are talking about high order, but this is at this level, the leading order motivation is resurgence here. So these are a few images which I stole from beautiful lectures which Gerald gave in Parma last year. We had a school on this stuff, a resurgence lecture symbol, and non-perturbative physics. By the way, Alexei, Gerard, even Yuya, and Ricardo were there. And Mitat was quite helpful in organizing everything. So we know what the general picture is. This is something which in turn I stole from Mitat's beautiful presentation at the Lattice Conference a couple of years ago. I like it very much because the question, can we make sense out of Klemme-Kassikas expansion of quantum field theory, really looks like the title of the paper you were referring to yesterday by Toft concerning all that stuff. And that probably was wanted. I mean, yeah. And it's nice to see that. By the way, notice that was the simpler question in that framework, okay? But in any case, this is what we will be concerned with. So you have a trans series, and then you know that from resurgence, you know that the behavior of the series around one perturbative vacuum is telling you what is going to happen about other saddles. The main point is that there are cases in which this is a low order, high order correspondence. So the difficulty is double. On one side, you have to go to large order, but then you can say maybe then the low order is easy. Well, low order is often associated with expansion around non-trivial vacuum. Okay? Also, this is something which is a recent work by Goce, Gerard, and Mitat, and actually Gerard told us about all this stuff in one of the tutorials during the program. There are cases in which you have low order relation, and this is quantum mechanics for a variety of potential studied via WKB. The good point here is that, okay, look again at the trans series, you will see that for each perturbative contribution, both the one attached to the standard trivial vacuum, let's call it this way, and the other attached to the instanton, you have a double parameter dependence, one of which is basically the harmonic problem you are sitting on, and that gives you a first description of the level. N equals zero would be the fundamental, the ground state, which is then corrected by the other fluctuation, which are the ones you are here interested in. Okay, this is a low order relation, but according to Gerard's words themselves, it could require heroic efforts to get contribution, for example, in the instanton sector. Okay, that is what we have in mind, and that's what we want to take care of. So both going to high orders and computing with respect to different classical solutions. So that is my agenda. Stochastic perturbation theory is actually the starting point, which was first formulated in the context of stochastic quantization, which I will briefly review. Then I will tell you how to go from stochastic perturbation theory to numerical stochastic perturbation theory. And in this way, we will start approaching a concrete quantum mechanical problem, just of that class I was referring to, commenting about the paper by Gerard, Mitat, and Goce. Okay? If there will be time, I will make a few comments on a few different frameworks for formulating an SPT. And then finally, I will tell you about the possibility of performing computation around non-trivial vacua. So, this is the standard problem in field theory as formulated in the path integral approach. Then, stochastic quantization, which was put forward by Parisi and Wu early in the 80s, amounts to the following. You take your original degrees of freedom, your field, and you provide a new variable. You can think of that variable as a stochastic time in which an evolution takes place according to the Langevin equation. So the time derivative, where now the time is the stochastic time, the fictitious one of the field, are dictated by something which are the equation of motion plus fluctuations, and those fluctuations are of Gaussian nature, okay? Then within this context, which is a stochastic differential equation, you get solutions, and over their solution, there is an obvious expectation value to compute, and that is the expectation value with respect to the eta, to the noise, okay? Now, the basic basic assertion is that if you compute the expectation value with respect to the noise of some observable, which is computed out of fields, which are all taken at the same stochastic time, in the time, stochastic time going to infinity limit, well, that average over eta is going to reconstruct the average you are interested in. That is the one dictated by the functional integral. How this comes about can be proved, for example, by going to a dual description of that, which is in terms of the so-called Fokker-Planck equation. So every single average over eta of any quantity you could be interested in can be actually traded by an average over field configuration in which the dependence on eta and on the time is put onto a probability distribution depending on the fields and on the stochastic time. Okay? Since Langevin equation is holding, you know how to compute an equation for this quantity, and this is the Fokker-Planck equation. Okay? So in this form, you know already what to look for. Basically, your idea is that this guy, the probability distribution of the field depending on time, in the long time limit, is going to reconstruct the measure of your functional integral. How can you prove that? You look for a solution to the Fokker-Planck equation in a series expansion in the coupling constant of the theory, then you can get a full solution for the leading order p of phi and t, and that in the limit t going to infinity reconstruct what you are interested in. Then you can plug the expansion into Fokker-Planck, and you have to prove two things which you are able to prove. One is that each order actually has an asymptotic limit, and second, there are relations in between these guys, and those are simply reconstructing for you Schwinger-Dyson equation, a solution of which provide you a solution to your field theory, in a sense. So this was an approach in perturbation theory to show that stochastic quantization is a good recipe. Okay? Of course, one can think of another expansion. You take the solution to Langevin equation and you expand that in the coupling this way. This is what was originally done in stochastic perturbation theory. The way you proceed is quite standard. First, you take a free field. This is an example for a bosonic field, and you look for a solution for that in terms of a propagator, which means the solution for your field is a time integral. Again, this is the stochastic time of a kernel times the stochastic noise. So you trade this equation for an equation for the kernel, you get this, which you can solve, and here you are. Then you play the standard propagator trick. Instead of saying, okay, there is one source in the equation I want to solve via this description, I plug also the interaction, and I take it as a correction to eta. What it turns out is something which you are going to understand quite well. You simply are trading a differential equation for an integral one. But the integral equation that you get is ready for being solved by iteration. This means, also in a graphical term, that you can think of this solution, this one if you want, the free field one, something like this. And here it is. Then you plug, by iteration, that solution step by step. And for example, next term will be something like this, which in graphical terms is this. And then you go on and on, and basically reconstructing observables amount to evaluating diagrams, which for simple theory turns out to be of the same topology of the ordinary diagram in Feynman expansion, which are recovered in the long stochastic time limit. Okay? So this was the standard approach to stochastic perturbation theory. But you want to go another way, and that is in a nutshell, what we want to do. So this is NSPT in a nutshell. We take the expansion for the solution of Langevin equation that is an expansion in coupling, in powers of the coupling. We plug this expansion into Langevin equation, which means that this equation now becomes a hierarchy of equation, each for every order in the coupling. The good point is that at any given order, the truncation is exact. You only get dependence on fields which are of lower order. Main point is that having said that, well, basically, you let the computer work for you. Okay? So these equations are taken, and we provide computer programs to solve them numerically. Okay? Now we come back to quantum mechanical problem. So that was in a nutshell. Now we want to have this in plain English. So in order to start, the problem we have in mind at this moment is simply quantum mechanics via Patti integral. So there was this paper that was pointed out by Gerard, which is an old paper by Mike Kreutz, introducing the possibility of computing in the formalities of quantum field theory, of Patti integral to be more precise, quantum mechanics, which is the standard thing you do. I mean, you compute the relevant transition amplitude in terms of Patti integrals, in which the action, notice from the very beginning, is a Euclidean one. Then, of course, you put everything on a lattice. And then, for example, a given observable in this limit is going to be the expectation value over the vacuum state of something which is your observable. And all these you can compute, as usual, in a quote-unquote statistical mechanics sense, which means you can go by Monte Carlo. And for example, the quantity we will be concerned with is the ground state. Notice the fact that there is the use of virial theorem here in order to kill one difficulty, which is evaluating this is not that easy, simply because quantum trajectory are not differentiable. Okay, but you know the Rivera theorem, so you can rephrase everything, and what you are interested in can be computed entirely in terms of the potential. Okay, so this is the standard games one can play. So what we do, for example, we can start from the quartic oscillator in an SPT. This is your action. Then remember what you have to do. This is your expansion, okay? An expansion in powers of the coupling, this one. Okay, you are working in the background on harmonic oscillator solutions, okay? And then you plug this expansion into Langevin, and that is what you get. So this is the equation for the leading order. Not surprising, this is Langevin equation for a pure harmonic oscillator. Then you get extra stuff. For example, at first order, you have something which dictates the time derivative with respect to the stochastic time. This is partly what you would have as if also first-order fluctuation were a free oscillator, but you have corrections. Those corrections at this order only comes as power of the leading order. Okay? Then a second order, again the same structure, plus, if you want, part of the equation of motion coming from the potential, but at that given order. And at this, in this case, this is something which is made out of leading order field plus first correction. And that's why the truncation is always exact. Notice that the very first equation is immediately recognized as a stochastic equation due to the presence of eta, but then all the others are stochastic due to their dependence on the solution at leading order. Needless to say, when you measure, you have to expand your observables as well. Second point, you need, of course, an integration scheme to run all these on a computer. For example, first-order Euler scheme or Runge-Kutta. In general, you would like to take control over the dependence on the finite step size, which in general you introduce while introducing an integration scheme. You want to extrapolate, so for example, you will extrapolate linearly for an Euler scheme, quadratically for a Runge-Kutta, and so on and so forth. And it works. So I played the simple exercise. How do I know that it works? Well, because there are smarter way to compute this, of course. And this is an example. This is a Mathematica package which I use with students. Not surprising, the name of the package is Ben der Vu. So it is a device to compute correction on top of the harmonic oscillator for the quartic oscillator. And by running this, it's very, very easy. It's much, much faster to compute those corrections as compared to what I did before. Okay? Now, what can you get? First of all, I have a few times, so I can do it. There are also different frameworks for an SPT. Huh? Till now, I've been referring to our original procedure. But of course, we were well aware since the very beginning that there are other formulations of an SPT one can think of. For example, instead of Langevin, one could take stochastic molecular dynamical molecular dynamics, okay, or Cramer equation, if you want. What's the point? It's exactly the same. You play the same trick with the expansion, but here we have an extra parameters, and then could be played around with in order to gain in statistics. Okay, and there were people working with that. Another possibility is a standard hybrid Monte Carlo, lattice gauge theory. People know quite well about that. The other point is that, okay, you can do pretty much in what I was simply referring on the fly, as you have different numerical scheme you can adhere to. In any case, this is not what we want to be concerned at the moment. The point is that there is something in which an SPT can quite easily perform well. And this is one of the examples in which, in Gerard's world, you usually need heroic efforts, which means perturbation theory in the background of different classical solutions, for example, an instanton. So let me point out why I was so sure that that could be done. And I have to say, I have been thinking of that for many, many years. But I strongly needed a strong motivation to do that. And that was I was expecting for just in these days. And it happened. Okay, so I'm really very satisfied with that. Something which was already done was people working in lattice gauge theory knows quite well that there is one scheme, which is referred to as the Schrödinger functional scheme, in which basically the space-time you are working on is a different one. So you impose, you stay on a torus as far as the spatial coordinates are concerned, but then on the time you give fixed boundary condition. Because of that, this is for example one choice of the boundary condition, you know that the background, the classical background, which is the solution at those energy of the equation of motion, is not the standard trivial vacuum A equal to zero, is something different. Well, what should be done in an SPT is simply write your fields as a correction on top of that background. And then you plug your expansion and you play. And for example, you compute in perturbation theory the correction to the coupling, which can be naturally defined in this scheme. And that, for example, can help you in extrapolating to the continuum limit, which is something which is controlled by something you can compute in perturbation theory. So I was pretty sure that that was a canonical example, but then what I have always been thinking about was just correction around instantons. Okay, so once again, simple quantum mechanics. Now we change our potential and we go, for example, to double well. Here it is, and here the bottom of your energy landscape. So the main point is around which vacuum are we going to expand? And notice that till then, till now, we have always assumed the trivial ones. Okay? So my solution was x0, plus lambda x1 plus etc. That x0 actually amounts to the quantum fluctuations for the oscillator, for example, in the case before, around the classical solution, which is the trivial one, the oscillator sitting at the bottom of the potential. Now, in this case, what am I going to take as the starting point? There are two obvious candidates, which are these points. Notice that I've already mentioned, phrased that in these terms. A better question to ask would be, around which classical solution are we going to expand? And we know that there are many. Those are the ones we have started considering. You can sit forever here, you can sit forever here. Okay? But you know there are other solutions. And fishing, go fishing for solution, hunting for solution is not that difficult, also at the numerical level. You can look for a king solution, this you would call an instanton, or a double king, that would be an instanton, hunting instanton, and so on and so forth. You can find many. No, now I want to be interested in Dean. Okay? And that what you do is a plain simple recipe, which means you select a classical solution, for example, out of this, I take this, then I re-express the field as that classical solution plus fluctuation on top of that. I plug this expression into my action and everything, and over there, the NSPT expansion, do you remember, leading order plus first correction plus second one, that is performed for the fluctuation field. Okay? What you will get is a perturbative computation around, say, one instanton. And this can be done. This is still very preliminary. It's really something which I did here in these days and finished just in these very last days, actually. Don't take these too seriously. I mean, I'm not telling you, for example, how they are normalized. Okay? There is a funny normalization which depends on the fact that you are measuring everything in terms of one specific unit, which is buried here. For example, this 0.05 is actually 0.5, which is the ground energy of an oscillator. And for example, you rescale for that going to high orders. But this plot, I wanted to show them to you because you learn something of how everything comes about. So it is a numerical method. So you've got signals with fluctuations and with distribution, which are decent ones. So you can think of computing averages, and your numbers will come out of averages over this distribution. Of course, you have to estimate autocorrelation in order to provide errors. Notice that I am completely skipping at the moment the fact that I want also to extrapolate in the time step I make use of in my integration scheme. But this is only to let you see that I got a signal. So that would be perturbation, an SPT around one instant. And of course, I could take this instead of this, or any other of the any which I could find numerically. What you do to find them, basically, is that you prepare something you know will go into, for example, a one kink, and then use, if you want, Langevin equation without any noise that is attracting you towards the solution of the equation of motion, and you select. And then you verify that equation of motion are actually satisfied to a very high degree, which degree? The numerical precision you are working in. So, all in all, NSPT has been around for roughly 20 years, but I think it is still good to have a closer look at it. I think there are many applications which are relevant for resurgence, and actually those were the ones motivating me just in these days, and I was quite happy to having had here the opportunity to think about that. Remember, this is a numerical tool, okay? Which means that you live with errors, statistics, issues, and all that, as usual, in a numerical computation. In many cases, still, it is quite difficult to have something working better than this to a given numerical precision, either from the point of view of going to high orders, as I let you see. I mean, Renormalons would have really been thought of something impossible to tackle in lattice perturbation theory, while it was eventually the scheme in which one could inspect them. And then the other point I was pointing out just in this presentation was expanding around different classical solutions is not that difficult. I mean, it's a natural thing to do with this thin framework. And also this is something which is quite effective. There are, of course, cases in which you can compute much better than this, but there are cases in which it's difficult to get to higher orders, like if you can do performing given tasks. Thank you.
Do you have a sense of how expensive this is once you go to higher dimensions outside of quantum mechanics? Is it something that you think will...
Well, this is
for instance, around instantons.
It's a tricky point. I mean, around instantons is not more difficult than around the trivial vacuum. Then there are, of course, case-by-case things. For example, one way I had to check that it was making sense what I was doing was when you perform all these plug and rewrite, you know that in this more general framework, you should get the same that you would get in this case. Actually, what you find is that your potential in that case depends on this guy. If you plug for that guy one or minus one, you recover exactly the other thing. So there are things like that. But then there is another point, which is usually the more degrees of freedom you have, the quote-unquote easier is to get a good statistical signal, basically because of large numbers. Okay, so for example, the signals I was showing to you were already the what you would call the closest you can get to the original formulation. Remember, at this point, you should take an average over the noise. What I'm meaning is that I'm averaging over several replicas of this, of the same problem, okay? And taking averages also at even given time. The point is that there is a trade-off for that. And that is something that you know, basically cases by cases. And there is an important point to be said about that, which is fluctuation in all these processes are not of field theoretic nature, okay? While the observable are, the fluctuation that you get is not something which you can give a given status at from the point of view of field theory. So those are complicated stochastic processes. A posteriori, you can control quite well whether, for example, the reason was I was satisfied was that, for example, this distribution, they are a decent one, no doubt about having variants defined and all that. That I know only a posteriori. I can guess something, but come on, for example, these are only the first two corrections. I have to work harder, which I know I can do, but those were done in MATLAB on a laptop, so there was no real effort in pushing for numerical. And to a certain extent, you need to push for some numerical effort in order to inspect what you are curious about. So the main point is fluctuations are not controlled by field theory, if you want. So to a large extent, you have to rely on experience.
Any other questions? So I have one. I think I'm a little confused about. So when you said you find these classical solutions and then do fluctuations on top of it, so you find these numerically, right? But in order to find them, let's say the instanton, anti-instanton, you need to have you need to solve the equations numerically with the coupling constant, because in order to see the instanton, anti-instanton, you need to see the the double well and so on.
Yeah, sure.
So in some sense, and then you take these equations and then compute the fluctuations around it with this power of Langevin equations. But I think in this case, even the classical solution has some dependence on the coupling constant.
No, but the
so
point
how
is
you,
that
how do you distinguish between
the point is that you have this double expansion. You have n and h bar in your language, okay? So the theory you get after that is something in which you divide, something which you regard as the harmonic oscillator, and something which is your fluctuations. Of course, your quantum your harmonic oscillators knows of the value of the coupling, which means is omega depends on the potential. Okay, so you've got your action. You plug and describe in terms of fluctuation. Those fluctuations have an action in which you can recognize something which you regard as harmonic oscillator, plus something which are corrections on top of that. Also for this is the same.
I mean, for those it's clear, but for the instanton, anti-instanton, or the instanton,
is much the same. The difference is that the potential you regard as potential as something depending on the solution. If you want, it's not a polynomial, the potential you find. Okay? That is not a polynomial in that case.
Yeah, maybe we can talk about that.
So, one short question is, do you have some accumulation of noise at high orders? So obviously one limitation for going to higher and higher orders is just memory, right, which grows linearly with order as far as I know, right? But do you have some increase of statistical noise at higher orders?
That's exactly the point I was referring to before. When you have a small number of degrees of freedom, the big fluctuations which can be there can be difficult to tame at very high order, okay? So you could say, you could think, okay, a simple problem remain as simple as it is in this framework, which is not the case, just for what he was pointing out, which is my comment before. I mean, with a large number of degrees of freedom, that problem is ameliorated, basically. So going to high orders, of course, in that case, you can't go to crazy orders because of the limitation of the fact that, okay, all these is better, quote-unquote, the standard non-perturbative simulation. For example, fermions are easy because they are in the background of a given solution. So inverting the Dirac operator, I did not mention that at all, is easy. It's some fixed recipes, which is iterative, nothing to do with conversion times and all that. Okay, so you always have a trade-off. Okay, a delicate trade-off is just what you are pointing out. With a small number of degrees of freedom at very, very, very high order, which you could say in principle, I can get there, okay? But over there, you're going to meet problem because of those. Which is to say, once again, you cannot not control in terms of field theory what is going to happen as for the fluctuations. So variances are not field theoretic, in a sense. They are still, they are peculiar to the stochastic, to the messy stochastic processes you set up.
Thank you.
So we have this kink there. There is a zero mode, no? There is, you can move the kink to the left or to the right, no? So when you do these fluctuations,
I take one particular one.
So the shape is actually pinned down. You don't
exactly.
I see.
Which is to say, you always start from an harmonic oscillator on top of which you have extra stuff. That extra stuff, in this case, is simply a polynomial. In the other case, it's not. Because in the transformation, the classical solutions enter.
So that's just dialed in from the beginning. You put a particular solution.
Yeah, in getting the equation for everything, for the action and all that, basically you do the same you would do in standard instanton computation, which is you perform an expansion around that solution. Okay, you know that there is no linear term in the fluctuation. Okay, And in that case, you have to play around with the solution of the equation of motion for the classical solution. You recognize them, and you find that everything cancels. But what you are left over is something which you rearrange in order to have one harmonic oscillator plus corrections on top of that.
All right. So if there are no other questions, let's conclude this session and have lunch.